You're listening to The Word from Westwood, a series of podcasts featuring sermons preached at Westwood United Methodist Church in Los Angeles, California.
Well, I was minding my own business working a crossword puzzle when I was asked in no uncertain terms to leave the den. Now, this was a universal request from the two family members that were in there with me. It is clear that I was in trouble and there was going to be grief. Now, you might be wondering what kind of horrible deed I could have done that would prompt that kind of response. I didn't think I had done anything wrong. Like I said, I was minding my own business working the crossword puzzle. Now, I will admit that there are indeed times when my failings are all too obvious, but I didn't realize that I was bringing evil into the midst of the family's sanctum that day. Now, I will say that this was one of those crossword puzzles which contained a few puns. Now, while I can't say I understand it, I am fully aware that there are many people who point to puns as evidence of the fallen state of humankind. What can I say? You know, when you're working this and the clue to a puzzle line is beer that is made in Johannesburg and the answer is stout of Africa, what's a person to do other than say that out loud? And then you discover that the answer to one who aspires to be the king of beers is Porter Prince. Now, folks, isn't that something you would want to share with the people around you? Then when you realize that sounds from a brewery are lager rhythms, wouldn't you be excited about that too? Now, I ask you, now you got to work with me on this. How can one be silent when you figure out that the toast said when raising presidential beer is ale to the chief? Isn't that something you want to share with everyone around you? Well, apparently my family didn't think so. And it's at that point in time when they forbade me to speak another word. And that's when I wish I had my daughter's fluency in American Sign Language, because it would have been pretty handy. I promise, no more puns, because I think you'll throw me out of here. Well, we heard a familiar story from Genesis this morning, a story that really is no laughing matter. Today's tale is not about, as you heard, a continuation of that familiar 6 days of creation with God resting on the seventh and everything in that tale of creation being called good. This is a very different story from a very different strand and a different tradition. And this, as you heard, is the story which includes Adam and Eve, the Garden of Eden, the tree of knowledge of good and evil, and the serpent. And it really is, when you look at it, a very serious story. Now, many of the stories, as we might remember, that are in our Bible are because they were an attempt to answer questions for our very ancient counterparts. Creation stories obviously address the how did the world get here inquiry. This morning's text is a little bit more multifaceted. It goes into more than just specifics about the creation of the world or the creation of humankind. And when we look at this, it's not unreasonable to think that the real focus of this tale is not so much about creation, but is instead answering the question, why do bad things happen? Why do bad things happen? How did evil come into the world? Well, over eons of time, people of faith have debated the particulars of this story and just what it might mean. And we scratch our heads and we wonder, was the serpent the real perpetrator here? Or was Eve at fault? Was Adam the one that was really at fault? Was it something else going on in this story? And the quick interpretation has generally been that disobeying God was responsible for things falling apart in paradise. Eventually, in the continuation of this story leading to Adam and Eve's banishment from the garden. Well, there are some who have taken a different approach towards this text, focusing instead on some of the particulars of the dialogue and not talking about this just in terms of disobeying God. But that dialogue that took place between the serpent and Eve. Now, if you remember here, and you can even look in your worship guide to see, the serpent led with an untrue statement. Did God say, "You shall not eat from any tree in the garden"? So yeah, it was a setup. And the woman responded, "We may eat of the fruit of the trees in the garden." And then she went on to say, "But God said, 'You shall not eat of the fruit of the tree that is in the middle of the garden, nor shall you touch it, or you shall die.'" Now, at first glance, we hear this and we nod in agreement with this statement, but on a closer inspection, we realize that the woman did some editing here and added some words to the statement saying, "Nor shall you touch it." So you see, some suggest here that the idea is that the problem sometimes with our human family is the manipulation of God's statements, or in the case of the man, completely ignoring what God had to say. So you see, one of the things we might interpret from this passage is that there's an attitude that it's not really all that important to pay attention to what God might have to say and what God's hope might be for our lives. And taking it even further, you could suggest that this passage has something to say that ignoring God and changing God's word are really somewhat indicative of our belief that we really are God, and we are creating God in our own image. Remember, the serpent's suggestion that the forbidden fruit would make them like God? Well, I'm not sure how helpful it is or is not to get stuck on these various interpretations of this text, because I really think we're better off putting our focus on imagining that this whole story is really a symbol of our human condition. I wonder if it isn't time to set aside this notion of disobedience and assigning that to this text, instead seeing this as a drama about the subject of free will. You see, one of the ways of looking at the tree of the knowledge of good and evil is to say that it is representative of the state of free will, where we are able to make choices. And you see, this creation story started with this sort of notion that the man and the woman really weren't thinking about much. They were just being, so to speak. But when they ate of the tree, the realization came over them that there were now choices to make. The realization came over them that there were the possibility of good choices and the possibility of bad choices. So thinking about this a little more, do we really believe that God's hope for us was for us to be some kind of strange automatons or zombie people of faith where we don't think and where we're not independent and we are just programmed to be? Or perhaps as a way to look at this story is that when God says, "Don't eat," God knew full well that we would eat. And that God knew full well that our real humanity is not experienced until we have to deal with this subject of free will. You see, this state of jumping into a playing field where free will is at work is also representative of, when we look at this story, the loss of innocence, which took place. So could it really be that this story is a symbol of the process that takes the good creation, eventually morphing it into something a little different, a different understanding, and maybe that the real task for us is to be spending more time identifying what the things are that really have grabbed a hold of us, What are the things that have changed us? What are the things that steer us away from paths of hope and justice and wonder, instead leaving us in some very lonely and desolate places? Perhaps we should look at this passage and think, why do we often find ourselves in the wilderness rather than paradise? When I think of this concept of the loss of innocence and associating it with this text, of going to a place of what we assume was bliss into a place of knowledge of the reality of life around us, I can't help, like many of you, but remember early in the morning 15 years ago on this very day. Linda and I were helping the three kids get ready for, it was the first day of school in our school district, and Mark was starting his freshman year in high school, and Peter and Elizabeth were starting a new school going into the seventh grade at the intermediate school in the district. And we were going about our business, and I received an early morning phone call from my mother telling me, you better go turn the television set on right now. Well, you know, my mom frequently calls to tell us to go watch things on the television set, which, shall I say, often are not of great urgency. But I decided to go and turn it on. And like all of you, we sat there in disbelief as we saw what was happening and the Twin Towers falling to the ground. Well, in our particular situation, one of our youth leaders at the Pasadena church that I was serving at the time happened to be at the Marriott Hotel at the base of the Twin Towers that morning. And her story was one of watching in horror everything that happened around her. But even in the midst of the horror, there were people who were making choices, using their free will to help each other. And she was taken in by a group of strangers, people she didn't know. Unfortunately, Denise lived to tell this story. But because of that event, her life was changed and always will be changed. And the lives of my children were changed, and the lives of all of our children were changed, and the lives of all of us have changed. You know, my generation and others of us here, we lived through the Cold War, and we had seen the fall of the Berlin Wall. And with the fall of that wall, we really had the hope that a new day was emerging in our world, a new day of peace, a new day of justice. Well, we seem to find ourselves, friends, now in the midst of another kind of cold war. And it's created yet another cycle of fear for us. And unfortunately, many of us do look at that day 15 years ago as a loss of innocence for many. I know for my children, they've never viewed the world the same. And the scary thing is that for every successive generation, it haunts them. In Sunday school a few weeks ago, Miss Kathy and Miss Dina and all the teachers were having conversations with the children in Sunday school. And it was quite a statement for children that day to be talking about their fears and how scared they were of ISIS. What's going on? What's going on when a 7-year-old is now worried about ISIS? What does it say about who we are? What does it say about the choices we're making and the cycle of fear in which we find ourselves? Yes, free will is a crazy thing, isn't it? Giving us the ability to make choices for good and for bad. Sometimes perhaps we wish that this symbolic eating of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, perhaps we wish that never happened and that we didn't have to deal with free will. But friends, it is our reality. And the thing about free will is we do have the ability to make choice for the good. We have the ability to make choices for the selfless. We have the ability to make choices for those things that build up our human family. And in that process, we also have the choice to choose to live a life where God is a part of it, where God is central to it. And on the other hand, we know there's a whole host of other choices that we can make. We can make the choice to live life in a way which centers on ourselves. We can choose to live life holding tightly to fear, and especially using that fear as a way to manipulate other people. We have the choice to plant seeds of doubt and mistrust so that we look at our neighbors with great suspicion. We have choices. Eating from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil means we have accountability for those choices. We can't plead ignorance. We are in a state where we indeed know what is going on. And it doesn't take much for us to look and reflect and see how these contrasting choices are so at work in our world today. The choice of a self-centered life, a life where we don't worry about anybody else, it's a choice, as I've said, that focuses on fear. It focuses on scarcity. Making that kind of choice is all about having an enemy. Making that choice often puts us in a place where we will do whatever it takes for us to get ahead, for us to be the winner. So we really shouldn't be surprised when we see the racism and injustice that is still very present in our world. We shouldn't be surprised that the financial industry still hasn't really cleaned up its act. Did you read about Wells Fargo Bank this past week and the firing of 5,300 employees for corruption and creating false accounts? We know that often when people make these kinds of choices, the only real dilemma for them is whether we get caught or not. We have a choice to walk down that path, and it's clear as we look around in our world and in our country, there are many who have made that choice. But at the same time, there are many, if not more, who have made the choice which focuses on hope. We've made the choice to focus on teaching our children about love and compassion. We have made the choice that we need to be the ones who speak for those who are voiceless. We make the choice to say we need to live beyond ourselves, that is the real calling. We make that choice especially when we look at Jesus' teaching and realize that's what he's calling us to do. He's telling us it's not about self-centeredness. It's about being in connection with the community around you. And there are many who make the choice for faithful living, for a life where God is present, where God is central. And we see that happening in the works of justice around us. We're building a Habitat for Humanity home because we have made that choice to be part of the solution, to be part of the hope. That's why we make the choice to be serving breakfast to the homeless or engaging ourselves in any number of activities around the community where we are trying to improve the plight of people around us. We're making the choice every time we share of our financial resources, knowing that we can be the safety net for people. So you see, even though there are those, because free will abounds, that make choices that lead us down a dark path, there are still many who make the choices for the light and the path of hope. So looking back to this narrative that we have, what do we learn from it? We learn that God was there from the beginning. And we learn in this narrative that humankind has been gifted, if you will, with free will. And we have this ancient story that talks some about the seeds of this free will and where it came from. And the other thing we know is, as we look in our whole faith tradition, is that in the midst of all of the peaks and the valleys, which start from this Genesis narrative so long ago, God has always been faithful. God is always there, undergirding, regardless of the choices that the human family has made. We are on a journey, friends, where we see both paradise and wilderness. We are on a journey that has the promise that God is there walking with us, holding us up, and that we are not abandoned. From our vantage point today, looking at this story of beginnings, we know and we have experienced God's faithfulness, God propping us up, even when it seemed a decision was made in this tale of so long ago of choosing to look the other way from God. So I suppose, friends, when I look at this story, it's a reminder to me, and I hope to all of us, that each and every week we have choices before us. We have choices how we're going to use our time. We have choices as to how we're going to use our resources. We have choices as to the words we speak to those around us. So, friends, the question really is for each of us, what choices do we make? What choices do we make each day and each week? Which path do we choose? Amen.
Westwood United Methodist Church is located at 10497 Wilshire Boulevard in Los Angeles, between Westwood Village and Beverly Hills. Sundays are at the heart of this faith community's life, and we invite you to worship every Sunday at 10 a.m. A wide variety of opportunities for all ages are also available every week. To learn more, visit us on the web at www.westwoodumc.org. Or call the church office at area code 310-474-4511. I'm Janet Hoskins. Westwood United Methodist Church. Do justice, love kindness, walk humbly with God.